if you could hang out with seriously talented copywriters and other experts, ask them about their successes and failures, their work processes, and their habits, then steal an idea or two to inspire your own work. That's what Rob and I do every week at the Copywriter Club podcast.
You're invited to join the club for episode 10 as we chat with A-list copywriter Ben Settle about mailing his list every day or more, pulling in six figures by working 10 minutes a day or less, zombie fiction, and stirring up controversy.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Ben. How's it going?
Ben?
It is going good. I do have to say one thing, because I got to keep the record clear on this. I can't let you guys get away with this.
You're going
to
say you're not an A-list copywriter.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I'm not even close to that. I mean, not only am I not in the same league, I'm not even in the same sport as, I mean, I really, and I know several of them, and I can just tell you, I don't work as hard as they do. I don't have their talent either. So anyway, I just wanted to clear that.
For the record, I put that in on purpose, knowing that you were going to say that the exact thing, because I've been on your list long enough to know that you don't talk about yourself that way.
Well, and I got to give you guys some props on something. Now, Kara, you, when you first contacted me and you kind of self-deprecated, you're like, well, the name of our podcast isn't like that cool or something.
Did I say that? Oh no.
You said something like, you just said, like, I think you just kind of like, but here's what I think. I think it's a perfect name because it's so clear. Like, there is no question what this is about. Like, you're not trying to get fancy. I actually prefer that. So I want to give you guys some.
Rob came up with it.
No.
So that's all him.
It's not nearly as cool as having a lair.
It's not a lair. A lair is. Are you guys both in there? Are you guys both in El Bembo's lair?
I just joined recently. Yeah.
God, that's a whole other podcast in and of itself. It's so crazy.
Exactly. Well, hopefully after we're done talking, we'll still be part of the lair. We won't be kicked out, but we've got some questions. We really want to dig into sort of the real Ben Settle and what goes on in the background. And so, Ben, my first question for you has to do with a lot of the stuff that you talk about in your email list, in the recent program that you did with AWAI, where you talk about working 10 minutes a day. And, to me, that sounds a little bit like one of those claims that just can't possibly be true. I think you must work way more hours than 10 minutes a day. You've written four books in the last couple of months. You write, the daily emails. You write this 12-page newsletter. I think it's 12 pages that you send out, paper newsletter that you send out to your list every month. And so I'm calling bull on the 10 minutes a day. Tell us the truth. How do you work? How much do you work?
All right, so it's a good question, but if you were really on my list and really paying attention, you would already know the answer to this. So I'm gonna do it anyway, Rob, because I like you.
Okay. I really am on your list, but yeah, let's do it.
So I only have So my main thing is my email players newsletter. That's like my main thing. It's not going to be my only main thing soon, but right for the last several years, that's been my main thing. I get up. I let my dog out first because that priorities. I come back in. I give a tall glass of water and I gag down like a bunch of health supplements, which I have no idea if they work or not, or just give me the most expensive piss in town. I don't know. I open the computer up. I write an email to sell email players and then I'm done. It could be 4 minutes a day. It could be 15 minutes a day, but generally it doesn't take me very long. That's all I have to do. Now I would go bonkers. Okay. I would go bananas if that's all I did all day. What am I supposed to do the rest of my day? Yeah. So that's when I write novels. I do joint ventures with other stuff. I do podcasts like this. I mean, I don't have to do these things. It's just fun. But what I have to do usually only takes me about 10 minutes. So in a way you're right, but in a way you're wrong, like a politician would say. I mean, I have to do it. I have to pull the girl card on that answer because it is what it is. But I only have to work 10 minutes. Sometimes I don't work at all. I'll go a whole week without doing anything. I'll just preload the emails up. When I launched my villains book a few weeks ago, I wrote all those emails on a Thursday. It was like 16 or 17 emails. That took me a few hours. And then I didn't do anything for like a week. I didn't have to write anything. So if I did the math on that and it came out to about 10 minutes per email. So yeah, I stand by my 10-minute workday. I really do.
And if we're going to add in the other products, though, you know, things like Copy Slacker, you're obviously you're working on these. These are the things that keep you sane. It becomes a product that eventually you sell, you know, through your list, through the 10-minute emails. But there's a lot of things going on in the lair on a daily basis.
Yeah, but I don't have to do it. Like, I don't I'm in there because it's freaking pandemonium in there, and it's fun, and I'm building this, like, crazy society. I mean, I don't know anyone who's done with Facebook or what we're doing in there. And it's not just me. I mean, I have some people helping me, obviously. They don't realize they're helping me. They're helping me. I'm pulling some puppet strings every day. And, I mean, it's like it's so fun in there that we've all started calling it real life in there, and everything else is fake life because so many people spend so much of their time in there.
Can you share a little bit more about what's happening in there? Because I did just recently join, so, and it sounds even more intriguing now. What makes it different as far as Facebook groups go?
Well, for one thing, it's a no value. I don't allow value in there unless I'm doing it, or who I call my head bitch in charge, Vice President Misty, who, you know, she's sort of like an unofficial business partner of mine for the last year or so. She does the voice, like the introduction voice on my podcast. I partnered with her on some other things. She's always there to help with stuff. I mean, my audience loves her. She loves them. She does things like contests, and she does these things called Misty Massacres. And I'll give value, she'll give value, but no one else is allowed to give value. And I literally ban people who try to give value when they know better. And so that's one thing that makes it stand out, because that's all you ever hear from people. I need value. Screw value. What we do is we're plumbing the depths of human psychology in there. If anyone who gets in, like, we have these things that we call thread holes. Okay. This is where a thread starts, and suddenly it's 1,000 comments, and it takes 10 different twists and turns. And usually we're talking about real life, deep stuff, the way people think. We're not trying to, like, it's not something you go in, like, I'm going to talk about the human psychology. It just comes out. And the few people who understand that are benefiting from this hugely with their copywriting, with their marketing. People who are in there just involved in this, and they're not trying to pike anything, they're not trying to sell anything, are finding their opt-ins going up because they're just interesting people. I want people to have personality in there. And what most groups do is they encourage value, which just has people swinging their dicks around trying to act like they're better than everyone. That's all they have. They don't have personality. All they have is value. I've reversed that. Now they have to have a personality if they want to participate, or they get ignored. And so, you know, this is a very new thing. I've had it planned out in my mind for months, but I didn't really start executing it till recently when I had more time to play with and that sort of thing. And so that's one of many, many things. I'm building a world in there. Like, I just wrote about this today, I think, actually, in my email. All my emails are, like, preloaded for a while, but I'm not sure if it went out today or not. But, like, a big influence of mine was Dungeons & Dragons when I was a kid. You had to build worlds. I'm building an actual world. It has its own language. We literally have our own language, a lexicon being built in there. It has its own culture. It has borders. I'm always joking around about my immigration and my wall that's being paid for by the tears of the people I reject. It's just, I don't let everyone in. In fact, I probably reject 70% of people if they don't fit certain criteria. I'm not even sure how Rob got in there, quite frankly.
Yeah. No, I wonder, somehow he's
my wall. I don't know. He's an illegal immigrant.
Okay, well, so this is a selfish question, but as we're building our club, and we just started the Facebook group for that, we just hit 100 people today. We are trying to add value, but we also want it to be our own world. Can we have value and personality and make it interesting and not sickening? Do you have any advice for us based on your experience so far?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the no value thing is just something I did originally to position myself as something different than my friend Dan Meredith, who's a genius with Facebook groups. I learned a lot from him. His is all about value. His is all about sharing feelings and all this stuff. I'm the opposite. I don't tell, you know, I'm in there with constant satire and entertainment. You don't even know if I'm telling, like, if I'm being serious or not. There's a girl in there who I call her my main chick. Like, I've got side chicks in there. I've got main chick in there. I've got a booty call in there. And nobody knows if I'm being serious or not. Her dad has been a fan of mine for a very long time and made her read my emails when she was like 18 years old. So she's been reading them for like 10 years. And so I made her my main chick in there, right? And I made this video for her dad because she asked me to, a Merry Grinchmas video. I basically told her dad in this video I plan to impregnate her and give her my demon seeds. Now, nobody knows if I'm being, like, you can't tell. Like, no, people, I'm getting private messages. Ben, are you really, You know, and that's the beauty of it. I just, it's satire and entertainment, which I think is the which is the future, in my opinion, of marketing is entertainment. And that's the whole point. It keeps people constantly on their toes. It never gets boring. Now, that's my goal with it. Your goal, it might be completely different. So it depends on your mission and purpose with this, with what you're trying to do with your Facebook group. To me, you can get value anywhere. I tell people, if you want value, go to this group or that group. I'll send people to your guys' group if you want. But I don't want to do that. I want to have deep psychological conversations where people don't even realize they're involved in this experiment I'm doing, and they love it. And they know what I'm doing, but they don't know when I'm doing it. And so it's a whole different thing. And it's, you know, 6 months of just deep thought into this and like trying to figure it out with what you guys are doing. I mean, if your goal is to, you know, whatever your goal is to position yourselves as high in the copywriting world or whatever, you know, you'd want to go about it differently. So it really just depends on what you guys want or are trying to achieve.
Yeah, good point. So you earlier, I think it was this week, you wrote about your 10X rule for reading books. And this seems like a really good idea that I think, you know, a lot of people who might be interested in listening to our podcast that maybe aren't exposed to the way you conduct your business or on your list could really benefit from. So will you talk a little bit about why when you find a great book, you know, you read it a minimum of 10 times, you know, why you focus so hard on that you know, while you're not out there looking for new stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because the only reason I figured this out was because I was so broke when I got started. I couldn't afford a lot of stuff. So I would get a book and I would do a lot of my homework on, because literally buying a $9 book was a big deal for me back then. That's how like completely broke I was. And so I would buy something. For example, I think my first book was Dan Kennedy's Ultimate Sales Letter. I read it at least 10 times. That's the only book I had. And I thought, man, I sure am getting a deep knowledge. Like I started writing copy and I was better than I was getting people who had been in the business for like 3 or 4 years and I'd been in it for like 3 weeks asking me to critique their stuff. And I was like, something, you know, I'm thinking, don't you guys already know this stuff? But the fact is I was just having a deep knowledge of that one thing. So what I would do is then I would make money from one client and I would reinvest that into another high, like what I would consider high, very high quality product. So I think my second product was John Carlton's Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets of a Marketing Rebel. I went through that probably more than 10 times. And I would just get this deep knowledge base. And then over the years, when I could afford to buy whatever the hell I wanted, I realized I don't want all this. Like most stuff out there is just crap. Why don't I read the 10 best products? And when I say 10, it could be more than 10, but just generally speaking, I'd rather have the 10 best products 10 times than 100 products, mediocre products one time. And I really believe it helped give me a very deep foundation. I mean, there's things that to me seem very basic that when I teach it, people are like awed by it. I'm thinking this is basic stuff, but that's because they've been, you know, wasting their time with nonsense instead of just going deep into the really tried and true proven things. So that's the way I look at it. You know, 10 times right now I'm reading a book called No, The Only Negotiation System You Need for Work at Home. It's by the late Jim Camp, who was considered the world's most feared negotiator when he was alive. He died a couple of years ago. This book, right now I'm on my second reading. I know I'll read it 10 times. It's so deep. There's so much going on in it. I'm not just going to toss this to the side and read somebody else's book that just because, you know, I get people sending me books all the time unsolicited, which kind of annoys me, actually. I don't know what to do with it. You know what it's like? And I'm going to go on a little side trip here. When I the last place I lived at in this town called Roseburg, Oregon, which I called the Burgle, they all called it the Burg. I call it the Burgle because it was hot crime and stuff there. When I first moved there, I noticed this like, one day a snake came under a little snake came in under the front door. And then the next day, like this little salamander did. I'm like, what the hell's going on? I open the door and there's this cat out there. And I believe the cat was just trying to welcome me to the neighborhood. He's giving me unsolicited gifts. That's like what these books are. They're like snakes and salamanders coming through the door. I didn't ask for this. And, you know, I don't yell at people for it because they're trying to be nice or anything, but it's just like clutter. I know I got to figure out what to do with these books because I hate throwing them out. But anyway, so yeah, 10 times is what I do. And, you know, it's worked out pretty good.
So what's on the list? You mentioned the Ultimate Sales Letter. You mentioned John Carlton's class and now Camp's book, No. What else is on that list?
Breakthrough Advertising by Gene Schwartz. I've probably gone through that 19 or 20 times. I mean, that's so deep. I mean, I read it once a year.
Agreed with that.
Ken McCarthy's copywriting course, and not a lot of people understand how brilliant that guy is. There's nothing bright, shiny object-y about his course other than he has a whole section on how to identify sociopaths, which is actually really fascinating. But I wrote the ad for it. He hired me to write the ad for it, so I had to go through it like several times. I think I went through it like 13 or 14 times, and I just kept imbibing this stuff, and I think it made a huge difference. Another one would be all the copywriting issues of Gary Halbert's newsletter. So they're not all found in the GaryHalbertLetter.com. I had to buy them. There was this guy named Scott Haynes who, if you guys know him, he's actually not doing too good right now. As of today, I believe he's got like a 25% chance of living. He's in the hospital because he had a stroke on Christmas. But he's one of the most brilliant copywriters I've ever met. I got to hang out with him a couple times. So he was one of Gary Halbert's only proteges, one of the few. And so I guess he had the rights. This was back in like 2003. He had the rights to sell just those copywriting issues. And so I bought those and I went through those well over 10 times. There's probably some other ones I'm not thinking of right now, but I mean, those are like the foundational, that was the foundational stuff. You know, that's the stuff that I still go through these things. I still go through Breakthrough Advertising once a year. I go through Gary Bensavenga had his $5,000 farewell seminar DVDs. I've gone through, I for some sick OCD reason, I actually count how many times I've gone through it. It's like 28 times now. And I just keep, once a year, I go through it and I just keep imbibing stuff. Matt Fury's original email course, which is really hard to find unless you just talk to him directly. I've gone through that probably 20, 30 times. I just go through these things over and over and over. There was this interview, I mentioned Jim Camp, and there's this interview he did with my friend Michael Senoff, which is only like an hour and 20 minutes long. I did like 10 years ago, I've been going through that. I've probably gone through that 40 or 50 times. The Boron Letters is another one. I know I've gone through that 30 or 40 times. I actually copied that whole book out by hand. That's how much I liked it. Paul Hartunian's publicity course. I get $1 million worth of publicity. It's not a copywriting course. But I learned so much about, I've gone through that at least 10 or 12 times because I wanted to do publicity. I wanted to like master it. The stuff I learned about just tight writing by learning how to write press releases, the way he teaches, has been like invaluable for my emails and copywriting. So, yeah, there's probably more, but those are the ones I can think off the top of my head.
Wow. Well, it's good to hear that, especially since I think people listening are like, you know, Ben Settle has it figured out. He writes great copy, but you're in it and you're reading this over and over again and revisiting it each year, which is just good to hear. But Ben, I want to ask you about email players. I'm a recent subscriber. I don't know why it took me so long to finally.
Yeah, what's with that? Why did it take you so long?
I really don't know. And then I don't know what finally did it, but anyway, I'm there. And so when I received my first package, I remember thinking like I was blown away. And I also was like, I wonder how he does this each month. And I was kind of like picturing you putting together these packets and the different colored paper. And so I just want to know more about what happens behind the scenes with the creation of that each month and how much time goes into it. If you have anybody helping you with it.
You know, some months it takes me an hour and a half to write an issue. Some months it'll take me 4 or 5 hours because, for example, I think yours first one was probably the December issue, right? Like you got the, the Gene Schwartz call. By the way, those CDs, that's another thing that I went through, especially the third one, which has Paris Slumpropoulos on it. He's one of my all time favorite, like he's a true A-list copywriter. And that's why I can't allow myself to be called on. Cause I met that guy and it's like, I can't even hold a candle to the stuff he does. But that third one in that I've listened to probably 20 or 30 times. It's just fascinating. But that I don't normally add like big packages like that. That was just a kind of a Christmas thing. The January issue will have a bonus in it, but it's just a transcript of a call. If let's say an issue has a lot of email examples, it's going to take me less time to write that. I mean, it's 16 pages. It's not like I purposely keep it at 16 because I have learned over the years that if I give too much information away, people get overwhelmed and they don't implement and they just can't keep up with it. So I purposely keep it limited to 16 pages. Some issues like the February issue, assuming you stick around for the February issue, you read all of my misogynist and sexist. I'm just kidding. It's satire, but it's very thick. Like there's no examples of emails in there. It's all like deep thinking, philosophical stuff about selling and the relationship between the dating world and selling and marketing. That issue took me a lot longer. because it's just wall-to-wall copy. I mean, it's like 16 pages of thick copy. People make fun of me, like, Ben, don't you know how to use the return key? You know, because these paragraphs are like 2 pages long. So that took me longer. So it kind of depends. The inserts I put in there, like the sales, like I always put a sales pitch for a back issue in every issue for the most part. A lot of those, I just look back whatever I put in there a year ago and just send that same PDF over. So I don't even like have to make new information for that. So it kind of depends. I would say on average, it takes me 2 to 3 hours to write an issue. That would be on average.
So are you getting ahead a couple of months? Like you mentioned the February issue. Well, I guess it's not really that far ahead, but do you have March planned out already as well?
Yeah, I've actually just wrote the April issue. Now, when I say I wrote the issue, it's like 80% done. I mean, it's the first draft. There's stuff I'll add to it. There's stuff I'll take away. But I like to be ahead because I don't like – see, unlike a lot of copywriters, and I'm just not this way. I wish I was kind of sometimes, but I'm the guy who had to get his homework done early in high school. I don't like working under pressure. I like to be relaxed. I like to get done everything done early so I don't have to think about it. So I'm always at least 3 to 4 months ahead on that.
Ben, I'd love to talk a little bit more about being controversial. You know, I know you.
Okay. I'm not that good at it.
I don't know. You've said twice that it's satire. You know, you'll call girls chicks and dames, which is very un-PC. I'm curious. It feels like this is something, to me at least, it feels like this is something that you cultivate in order to make your brand stand out.
Yeah, I don't actually try to offend. Like when I call Kira a dame, I'm not trying to offend her. It's actually a term of like affection. It's not insult. It's not meant as an insult. When I do it, okay, so people in my world understand that I'm just trying to be entertaining. That's it. And the fact that people get so like wound up over it's not like I'm calling people bitches, you know, something like that, you know, I'm not calling girls hoes, you know, like doing that. It's just, to me, it's fun. It's just, it's like old school 1940s gangster talk. It's just, to me, it's fun. Now, I mentioned my villains book earlier. One of the chapters is about the Joker and how he, like 13 ways he has, the reason he's so, like, think about Joker, okay? I mean, he's like all the super, he doesn't have any superpowers yet. All the superpowered villains and heroes fear him. Okay, like he's the scariest dude out there, and he's just like this regular guy, you know. And well, why does that? Well, I analyze like all. I'm a big comic book fan, and I like the movies and all that. And I just analyze like 13 things that really stood out, and I noticed that all these 13 things give him impact. And so all I'm trying to do is have impact. If using the word dame, okay, whatever, or chick, if that's really like, unfortunately, we do live in this like mush cookie society where people get like offended by that. I'm gonna use it. I'm going to use it. And I'm going to give people what I call the medicine. I'm going to give them medicine. I'm going to show them how to just calm down and relax and have fun and stop taking life so seriously, because those are the best kind of customers that I've ever had. At least I don't like these uptight people. It's like the old school Southern preacher. I got to get them lost before I can get them saved. So I got to give them the medicine. And sometimes that means just being this like, you know, I just take my personality in real life, which is what you guys are listening to now. I'm not putting a show on or anything. This is how I talk. And I ratchet it up a couple notches in my writing. I just a couple, I take the personality and I just add a couple notches of exaggeration to it. And, you know, am I saying that everyone should do that? I don't know, but it works for me. So that's why I do it.
You talk a lot about fun, and I've heard you mention fun, you know, in a couple other interviews. And, you know, I think that's kind of what gets pulled out of the writing process, especially when you are working with clients. It really, the fun is drained out of it very quickly. So how do you keep it fun? I mean, I don't know if there's a trick to it, but especially you've worked with clients in the past. So I'm just thinking in the client atmosphere, when you do have that deadline and it doesn't feel like fun, what are some ways to kind of just shift your perspective?
You know, this is one reason I don't do client work. I was just helping someone recently, you know, and she's a really good, she's only been in the business for, I don't do a lot of coaching or anything. I was just helping her just because we're friends and all that. She's only been in this business for 6 months. And she's already got a job writing copy for a very well-known, well, you know, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to name this guy, but let's just say he's probably the number one name in direct marketing and has been for like 30 years. Somehow she's got that, right? But she's smart enough to realize that if she just does, like, she's writing product launch formula style emails for them right now. Now, I don't know jack about product launch formula because I just it's just, I don't know, I never got into it, but I understand the basics of it. And she's wisely making these emails her own, putting her own twist on these things, even though they said just follow the system and just write exactly like this, use these swipes. She's wisely doing it in her own way. And my guess will be, and we'll find out soon enough, that they will appreciate her more as a result, because she's not backing down to nonsense. When somebody says just swipe this, that's a terrible like goal to have. I think a copywriter has to realize that your client is not necessarily the person writing the check. In fact, I don't believe that is the client. I think the client is the market. This is something I learned from listening to something over and over. Eugene Schwartz, he did two talks. He did one to Rodale Books and one to Phillips Publishing back in the 90s. And they're both excellent. I know I've listened to those probably 50 times. I never get tired. And I remember him saying, when you're writing copy, you have no client except the market. They're really the ones that pay the bills. They're the ones that pay your client. So if you have to serve them, this is going to cause problems with the guy or girl writing the check in some cases. It just depends. It depends how well you pick your clients. I mean, I got really lucky with clients. I make fun of client working on that, but the reality is I had some really good ones who just, for example, in the self-defense niche, I would write this most violent stuff. Just like, I would write copy about, you know, kick somebody here and he'll be pissing blood for the next, you know, 2 days. I would write stuff like that thinking, oh, he's going to make me, he would just add to it. He would actually run with it and say, wait, let's make this even more bloody, you know? So that was a cool client. On the other hand, I had some clients who were really like reserved, and they would get really nervous if I would do anything outside of what they considered normal. I would push them even harder. I would push it as far as I could possibly go, and then they could rein it in if they want, and it's still going to be better than what they thought. So my point is that you have to serve the market first. What do they need? Give the market what they want, and always be willing to make your case. Bob Bly, you guys know Bob Bly, I'm sure, right? The great Bob Bly, one of the best copywriters to walk the face of the planet. And him and I become kind of like, I don't want to say we're friends, but we definitely are like pen pals. Like he's on my daily email list, and he'll write me back a lot, and sometimes he'll agree with me, sometimes he'll disagree. It's fine. We just kind of have this banter. He said something very brilliant once on this interview he did with my friend Michael Senoff. He said there are arrogant clients, and I can work with clients who are ignorant, and I can work with clients who are arrogant. I cannot work with clients who are both. So an ignorant client is someone who knows they don't know. They've hired you for a reason. They expect you to run with everything, and they want you to. And they're great. Those are great clients. They're fine. You also have arrogant clients who are very talented. They know what they want. They're kind of pricks, okay? But you're going to learn something working for them, because they really do know their market. They know what they're talking about. They will make you grow, and they will challenge you. I had one client like that once, and it was great. I mean, it sucked when I was working for him, but now I look back, and I even told him, like, dude, I thought you were a dick, but man, I learned a lot of cool stuff, because he would run and test stuff. But I can't work with someone who's both, someone who doesn't know they don't know. You know, that those are the ones I would say you're kind of in a lost cause with, because they don't know. They think they know, but they don't. And you can just kind of grit your teeth and do the work and cry all the way to the bank, I guess. But I would try to turn those off, those type of clients away, if I was taking clients.
Ben, I want to change directions again a little bit. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you've been in a mastermind with Brian Kurtz and a really good group of marketers and other writers. You may have been in another one with Ray Edwards, if I remember. I may have heard you talking about something like that in the past. What have those kinds of groups and experiences done for you and your career?
You know, it's. I have to admit something. Brian Kurtz has been trying to get me in his mastermind group for like a year and a half. I love Brian Kurtz. I think he's one of the most brilliant people I think I've ever like met. And he's certainly the classiest person I've ever met. I mean, I talk to this guy and I feel like such an uncouth jerk, you know, like, he's so cool. That said, I've never been in his mastermind. I spoke at a mastermind of his a couple months ago, and I told him, I go, you know, I hate traveling like to these things. And the only way I'll go to one of these is if I'm speaking or training. That's kind of like my rule now. And so I just want to clarify, I've never been in like a member of his mastermind, but I did attend it. And there is some really, really powerful stuff, especially it wasn't his mastermind. It was his master class that I went to. Actually, I don't think that's the same as his actual mastermind. It was the same thing though. And I'll tell you what, I don't usually get a lot when I do go to, I don't go to them anymore. Like I've been to a couple masterminds and I always just get really bored. I just get fidgety. I'm just not into it. But I always walk away with at least one thing. And from Brian Kurtz's thing, this last one in October, he had a speaker there named Victoria LaBalm, who she teaches TEDx speakers how to rock the room. I mean, that's like her website, rocktheroom.com, I think. Anyway, she gave a talk and she said one, I don't remember her talk at all, except one thing she said. And it just stuck with me. And I'm pretty sure that was what she was going for. She just wants you to walk away with something you remember. She says, when you're giving a talk, and this goes with copywriting, sales letters, emails, videos, whatever you're doing, it all applies. When you're giving a talk, the audience should feel like time has stopped. And I'll tell you what, that is some of the most valuable advice I've ever gotten. And I never would have got it had I not gone to that and been invited to speak there. So even though I'm kind of a snob about going to masterminds and all that, I probably should go to them. But I don't like leaving my dog and all that unless I'm speaking or whatever, I don't go to him. I was never in a Ray Edwards mastermind, but he did interview me for his thing he did in the summertime, which was really cool. And him and I have been friends for a long time, but I've never been in like I take that back. I know what you're saying now. Ray Edwards and I used to be in a really informal mastermind several years ago with Ryan Healy and John Angelacci and Daniel Levis.
Exactly. I remember, you know, Ray talking about that on maybe his podcast or something.
He probably did. Here's the interesting thing about that mastermind. There was no pressure. I mean, unfortunately, because nobody was paying to be in it, usually we never had quorum, like three of us that show up. But that was fine. It was very interesting. One thing I learned from that, and I don't know, I think this would help copywriters actually. It really helped me. Was I learned to not send them copy to critique it. Now, this isn't because they weren't brilliant copywriters, they were. But they didn't understand my market, so the advice they would give I knew was just bullshit. Not because they were bullshit, but because they didn't know the market. So I learned real years ago from that mastermind, I would talk about other stuff with them, business stuff and all that. But as far as like critiquing my copy, no. What I would do is send my copy to people who are in the market. They are far better at and it's funny because I had this told to me before that experience by this guy named Doug Deanna, who's like an A-list copywriter, one of the best out there. If you can talk about A-list, I mean, he's up there. And I remember him saying, I don't do critiques. I can't critique someone's ad if I don't know their market. Otherwise, I don't know what I'm telling them. And that was something I had reinforced in the mastermind at Ray Edwards. It's not that those guys weren't brilliant. They're all actually better copywriters than me. But they never knew the markets I was writing to, so they couldn't, like, they didn't know the golf market at that time. So I'd send them an ad, and they'd be, like, giving me advice that I know just isn't good advice. Not because they aren't good copywriters, because they just didn't know the market. So if any copywriters listening to this, which I assume everyone listening to this is a copywriter, take your copy to someone in the market. For example, I'll give a real-life example. So when I am a couple of years ago, Agora Financial flew me into Baltimore to give a talk, to teach three things to their editorial and copywriters that were in staff that day. They wanted me to teach email marketing, infotainment, and storytelling. And I ended up talking to this copywriter there. I don't want to name him or anything, not because it's bad, not because what he did anything wrong or anything, but just because he probably doesn't want me saying anything, you know, just his own privacy. But him and I got to talking. I was like, you know, you guys at Agora have like the best legal department for writing supplements. Like, I hear you guys have the best. And I had this ad that was selling a prostate product for people who have prostate problems. And he goes, yeah, we do. I'm like, well, can you like give me some pointers on this? Like, how can I avoid, you know, getting in trouble with the law and all that, even though I'm not like making claims on. He goes, well, let me take a look at your ad. So he did. And a few days later, I get this long email from him saying, Ben, I think I have prostate problems. that was the sales letter. Now, he's only in his upper 20s. He does not have prostate problems. But he was part of that. I didn't even know he was in the market. But, you know, his feedback was invaluable. He didn't try to, like, critique the copy. He was basically – he bought the product, and then he bought another product that I was selling from that product because of the copy. Now, that's the kind of feedback that helps me. You know, that's how I know I was doing right. Now, he wasn't coming at it from a copywriting point of view. He was coming at it from just a guy. You know, guys tend to read this prostate copy and they get scared because I put some scary stuff in there, you know. And And so I don't know if that helps anyone, but I say go to your market for critiques. Don't go to other copywriters unless it's like technical stuff. You know, then it's okay. Like, for example, I had that same prostate ad. I was talking to David Deutsch. Now, he's probably the best direct mail guy out there right now in the game. And him and I have known each other for a while. And he's an email player subscriber. And he's like, hey, you know, Ben, let's get on Skype and just kind of talk once in a while. So we did. And he looked at my headline and he was like, God, Ben, this is like, in his own way, he's much nicer about it than he needed to be. Basically said the headline was boring, right? I mean, not in so many words. He goes, I'd like you to Ben settle this thing up a little bit like you do in your emails. That one piece of advice. Now he actually, you know, he was looking at it from a copywriting point of view, actually was very helpful. And so I changed it and made a much better headline. But that's because he wasn't trying to critique the whole ad without understanding the market and all that. He was coming, that was a technical thing and that was helpful. So you can get good information from like really high level copywriters, but generally speaking, take that to the market. That's where you get your best feedback.
No, that's a huge help because I love getting critiqued, but I realize as you were saying that I probably sometimes I'm asking the wrong people to critique my work. So yeah, I have to think about that. And Ben, I joined your apprentice program. I don't remember what it was called or if that's what it was called.
Yeah.
A couple months ago, 6 months ago. And so
that was in July. Yeah.
July. And so I have a bunch of questions, answer whatever you want, but you always mention an ex-apprentice. And I really want to know who she is or he, because you mention her all the time and I'm dying to know. So that's one question. And then I just want to hear about, you know, how that program went. I know you shut it down and you were really wonderful with your transparency. And I think that's when I really started to like you, because I thought you handled that so well. And so I had a lot of respect for your team and I didn't know as much about you at the time. So that was my first experience. And so I want to hear about that process and then why you never want to do that again, if that's true.
Okay. No, these are very good questions actually. And I haven't talked a lot about this stuff because to me, it's not that big of a deal. It seems to be a bigger deal to everybody else, but okay. So starting with the ex-copywriting apprentice, let's just get this out on there because everybody does ask me about this. So when I moved to Roseburg, Oregon, and I don't live there anymore. I live on the coast now, back in Bandon, Oregon now, thank God. But when I moved to Roseburg, Oregon, I needed someone to clean my house because I just, you know, I'm just too lazy to do such things. 10-minute work day, you know, keeps me very busy. So my friend Trevor Mock, who's like one of the, he's one of the most prominent businessmen in that town. He's a good friend of mine. He's the one actually got me to move out there. He's like, well, I know this girl who could clean your house, and he gave me her information. I contacted her. I hired her. She was great. I mean, just great at it. She just made my life so easy. And then later on, she started another business where she would cook meals, gourmet meals, because she's an excellent cook. I mean, just one of the best I've ever had. And she would deliver those to your house, which is, okay, now that's two of my, you know, you're getting me where that's. So after that, I thought, well, she's already cleaning my house. She's already cooking my meals. I might as well date her. So I started dating her. And very early on while we were dating, we kind of dated on the sneak actually for a couple months because I just don't like the spotlight. I mean, it's just one of those towns where I just don't feel like whatever. But after a couple months, she was on my list. Like one of the reasons, right when she started cleaning my house, before we even dated, she got on my email list. It was a whole new world to her, this direct marketing stuff. And she was like just reading my emails every day and she'd respond to them because she thought I was actually writing her personally, which is a good sign. I mean, now it didn't go on forever, but she kind of figured it out. But that's the effect you're going for. You know, that's just how anyone who's not in this business, that's how they don't realize it. That's what you're going for. So anyway, she would read my daily emails and she got into it. And when she started that business where she was delivering meals, she started like, she didn't have any of my products or anything. Just by observing what I'm doing, she started writing some emails, which she would also turn those into like these Facebook group posts. She'd go to like local Facebook groups. That's how she was selling herself. And she wrote this one about, like she wrote this ranting email about Minute Rice. Like, you know, like she just like, she was real passionate about how much she hates instant rice. You know, I've never seen anything quite like it. And I said, you know, this is a really good email. And I said, I'm going to use this as an example in one of my email players issues. And she got real excited. And then I made what I believe is a mistake in hindsight of taking her on as an apprentice, which basically just screwed everything up. You know, it's hard to work with people that like in that capacity. And she just, our personalities just did not really mesh that well in that relationship. So She was my apprentice for a few months, and then she soon became my ex-copywriting apprentice. And that's why, which to me adds the entertainment level to the whole thing. Like again, I'm going for, even in my Facebook group, I go for this like 90210 type feel to everything. Like, there's a little soap opera going on. That's why I got like a main chick.
Trying to figure out if you're Dylan the bad boy or Brandon.
The kind of I think I'm just like the dad or something. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm David, the little geeky guy.
No, but, don't be David.
I'm up there rapping. But, you know, so anyway, long story short, that's how she became the ex-apprentice, and she just didn't really, you know, she just had to go her own way. And honestly, her and I have not talked since June because we had a falling out. So I actually have no idea what she's up. I saw that was one of your questions. I couldn't even tell you what she's up to because she doesn't speak to me anymore. So take that for what it is. Soon after that is when I launched El Bembo's Apprentice, which had not a whole lot to do. Even though I wanted to use her story, I couldn't. After the falling out, I didn't want to use her story. In fact, that was like the last thing she ever told me. Is like, I don't want you using telling people how much money I made or anything. So I'm fine. That's fine. I understand that. I don't have a problem with it. But I launched El Bembo's Apprentice, which had been in the works for months before that, which was a membership site because I was given so much free information on my podcast on accident. I wasn't intending to. I'm like, I need to be charging for this. Why don't I have a paid podcast? Let's just see what happens. I told my producer Jonathan. Jonathan Rivera is my producer, and we kind of like partnered on all that. And then I brought Misty, the podcast babe, and she's the one that does my, you know, the introduction voice and all that. I brought her in because she was writing my emails for me to that list, the podcast list. And she was great at it. And she's really the only person I've ever let write emails for me because our personalities are so similar. So we decided we'd do like a three-way partnership on El Bembo's Apprentice. And it was probably the most successful launch I've ever done. I mean, you know, just looking at the upsells, and I think each buyer was worth like $27 or something for a $7. You know, they got in for $7. Well, you were there. You got in for $7, but we upsold like four things to you and all that. And it was very successful. But the problem was it was a total nightmare. I knew I wanted to end it before the – in fact, I purposely didn't even send that many emails out the last day because I'm like, this sucks. I hate this. I mean, nobody knew how to use a support ticket system. Like, they're coming to me personally. I got like 50, 60, 70 people coming to me. I mean, they have legitimate problems. I'm not saying they shouldn't. But it was like, if it's like this at 1,000 members, what's it going to be like when it gets to 10,000 members? They're hunting me down on Facebook. They're hunting Misty down, asking her technical questions. And Jonathan, he was going crazy. And, so I just said, I'm ending this. I don't need it. I mean, it's not worth it. And it's like, I'd rather live life in a way that I enjoy. I don't really need the money. It's nice, but it's like, I don't need it. I'd rather go put this energy into something else. So that's the story behind that. And I literally killed it off the day after the launch. And it took a couple months though. We had to still deliver on some stuff and all that, but that nightmare is long past. And, I still wake up in a cold sweat thinking about it at times, but you know, that's the lesson. Like my lesson for that is I don't belong in a membership site. Some people love that. My friend Ryan Lee, for example, he's been doing membership sites for 18 years. And even he says, man, a print newsletter was so much easier, but he's good at it. He's a social guy. I'm just not that social. I'm not this extroverted guy. I'm like this introverted Grinch. I'd rather be yelling at people. You know, I want to be like, so that's why I'm not a good person. Now I know people who are great at membership sites and they should. There are people who like doing print newsletters who should do that. There are people who hate doing print. I know someone who hates doing print newsletters, but he does one anyway. Makes no sense to me. So, you know, you got to kind of build your business to suit your preferences. And I think that's the big lesson out of that. You can't, that's why, you know, going around, like a lot of people like to follow people and trends and all that. Well, that's what so-and-so's doing. That must be what's working. No, that's what's working for that person. What works for you might be completely different. So we talk about Facebook groups, right? You know, what you guys are doing and your goal for your group is completely different than the one I have doing. But if somebody just said, oh, I got to do it because Ben's doing no value, I need to know no value, they may not get any members that way. I've been building this audience up for 15 years. I mean, they're used to me. They understand what I'm doing. There's a relationship and a bond there. And it's all intangible. It's not something that can be tracked or measured, you know, in any way other than my gut feeling and knowing my market. So that's why I think everybody has to make their own way in this. And if they do, they will stand out and they will be much more successful and have more peace of mind.
So Ben, I have one more question for you. You know, sure. When you launched the community, you killed off the podcast, or at least you were going to put it, fold it into the community, and then you killed it off. And I have to say, you know, one of the most valuable podcasts I ever listened to was the series that you did when I think you tore apart one of Misty's sales pages. So you basically went step by step, and I can't remember if it was three or four episodes, but I listened to that three or four times, even for experienced writers. This stuff is gold. But then the podcast was gone, and I know you, I think you just brought it back. It doesn't look like it's on iTunes yet, but it's on your site. Are those kinds of things coming back? Is the podcast a weekly reality now? Is it something that you're throwing time into? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So I always knew I'd come back, you know, in a podcast, but I wanted to do it very methodically and different than before. The old podcast, which is called The Ben Settle Show, which is dead, I have it on my site as archived. So they're all on my site. They're not, I don't think those will be on iTunes ever, but they're on my site. They're on my producer's site too. So those are easily accessed on my site now. The new one is on iTunes, and we just finally, you know, I don't know why I didn't do this originally, but I just finally put an iTunes button there, you know, for people who prefer iTunes. And so I just launched it on January 1st, New Year's Day. We've got the first 20 shows in the can, so all the way through like May, one a week, because we like to get ahead. And so I can assure you it gets really crazy and really like controversial. I'm not trying to be. But for example, I do a whole episode on why I think equality is bullshit. Exactly. So, you know, but I, you know, not because I don't think it's a good thing, but I just don't think historically it's ever been a reality, and I don't think it will ever will be. And it's, you know, so there's just things like that I get into. I'm trying to keep it less how to and more mindset, you know, like thread holes, like I would do in my group, just deep thinking on stuff. Sometimes it's how to, some of it is. But hopefully, like in the power one, you can read stuff that goes beyond business.
Ben, you know, I've got my last question. Just from your perspective and everything you've learned with clients, beyond clients, what should new copywriters take advantage of in today's market? Have you seen anything where like there's a big hole because we're all focused on writing sales pages and emails and web copy, but there's something else that we could step into? Is there something that we should be paying attention to today?
Yeah, you know what we have today, so what we have is a glut of copywriting information, right? It's like when I was starting out, they didn't have podcasts or any of this stuff. It's great. I mean, there's so much out there. It's like now you have to figure out what not to pay attention to. Here's what we have going for us. And this stuff has been around since the internet's inception, but man, it makes life so much easier at the research stage when you can just go be a fly on the wall in a forum somewhere. So for example, I was in the weight loss niche for a couple of years, and the guy who did the traffic and the stats and all that is my friend Jim Yagi, and he's like an AdWords guy. And when I did Copy Slacker, I asked him, I said, can you give me like some kind of testimonial about how I've helped you? Like the product hadn't existed yet, but I just wanted testimonials about how I helped him. And he goes, Ben, I don't think I told you this, but your emails and your copywriting and your sales letters converted the front end list at 40%. To buyers, which is pretty good.
That's not bad at all.
And even in a rabid market like that. Now, I'm not an overweight woman. I don't know, like, you know, I mean, maybe people might think I am, but I'm not. Like, I don't really understand the problems they have, right? So how could I write to them? Well, I did all of my research and just going to forums where heavy women hang out and where they think it's anonymous, because it is, it's the internet, but, you know, they don't realize there's lurkers and all that. And they will say stuff that they would never say to anyone else in real life. There's just no way. I would get so much insight by just being a fly on the wall and really understanding where they're coming from, really empathizing with them. Really, like, there's so much about that market that the average weight loss marketer just doesn't see, because they're not doing that. They're just looking at all the other ads out there and saying, well, I'll swipe that and that's what's working. That's a terrible way to go about it. You got to go deep into these markets and really like try to become one of them mentally, like get inside them. And these forums, and they just make it so easy, especially for writing emails. So I'll give you an example. Some of the best emails I wrote were just, I would go to these weight loss forums, and most of them, the software would let you sort the threads by the number of views. So if, like, the most viewed thread would be at the top. And a lot of times those thread titles were just subject lines. Like, I could just pluck right out. I mean, those are obviously getting a lot of views. And I would read the stories people would write in them. So one of my highest selling emails was in that market, was the subject line was humiliating fat Facebook pics. And that was actually the name of the thread. And it was about this lady in there was trying to lose weight. I mean, she's eating right. She's exercising. I mean, you really, like, you rooted for this girl. You wanted her to be okay. But her friends, her passive aggressive so-called friends, were tagging her heavy pictures on Facebook just to bring her down. And so I wrote an email about that. Now, no other weight loss marketer that I know would have thought of that. I wouldn't have thought of it. I had to go to the market to get that. Never would have thought. A copywriter would never think that. You have to go into the market. And incidentally, that made us a lot of sales. But when I got out of weight loss, there's these guys that are like two of the highest selling affiliates, like on ClickBank in that market out there, like just really, really high level. And I said, dude, why don't you take this email and just tell me how it works? So he used it during this launch where they were competing against like people with like 2 million person lists, like BioTrust and all this. And he said they were just killing it. They beat everybody and they weren't even mailing as much as these other guys because he was using these emails I wrote like 3 or 4 years earlier that were just purely market based. You know, there weren't even any claims in them. I was just walking people through stories, like these horror stories that they were going through. And so I don't know if that adds to anyone's life or not, but, you know, that was a very, very, very profitable lesson for me to learn.
Yeah, message mining is a tactic that I think just about everybody could improve their copy, you know, by asking the market what they should be saying to them. That's fantastic advice. So, Ben, we haven't really talked about zombie fiction. You know, there's all kinds of things that we can talk about, you know, as far as like mailing you. But we are running out of time. So hopefully we can have you back in a future episode. In the meantime, though, where would people find you if they want to connect with you online?
First of all, I would be honored to come back whenever you guys want. So, I mean, it's no problem on that. You can find me at bensettle.com. And if you give me your snowflake precious, precious email address that you're so scared, everyone's so scared of giving up, I will send you the first issue of my email players newsletter. It's a print newsletter, but I'll send you the PDF of the first issue. It's a very real $97 retail value. And there's 24 ways in there to start making more sales with your email, like starting right away. I've had people literally tell me that free issue made them thousands and in one case, tens of thousands of dollars. And that's just the free issue. And you can have it if you go to bensettle.com. If you don't opt in, if you say, Ben, I don't trust you, I don't like you, which is understandable by the end of this call. And you say, I'm not going to give you my, or you think you're just going to give me some like bull crap Hotmail address. That's fine. If you click through, you don't have to give it to me. You can click through and there's almost 2,000 pages of blog posts. There's well over a dozen hours of interviews I put up there. And plus my podcast is up there. My old podcast is up there. That's like 60 hours worth of content and it's all there. It's all free. It's just, you know, there it is. Bensettle.com.
Fantastic.
And Ben, can we hang out with you anywhere? Are you going to, do you go to conferences or can we hang out with you in person ever?
Yeah. I mean, only when I'm speaking do I go anywhere. So here's what's on the agenda for 2017 as of now, and hopefully more will be added. In February in New York, I'm doing an event with Dan Meredith and Ryan Lee. We call it Good Cop, Bad Cop, Insane Cop. And Ryan's the good cop. I'm the bad cop. Dan's the insane cop. And we're going to teach about continuity, how we make a living with continuity. I do print newsletters. Ryan does membership sites and Dan does a paid Facebook group. That's going to be a one day. It's only going to be like $200 to attend. That's in New York. That's the February 4th, I believe. I'm also in Orlando, the week after that, I'll be in Orlando speaking at my friend Ray Higdon's event on email marketing. So that'll be in Orlando, I think the 11th or something like that. Later on in the year, and we're me and Misty, who I mentioned before, and another friend of mine named Troy, we're doing an event in Napa, California at a winery. And we haven't even promoted that yet, but we already have the place. We can fit like 20 or 30 people in there. It's going to be like a wine tasting event. You know, we have 4 hours. The first hour will be just talking, whatever. The second and third hour, I'll be teaching. And the fourth hour, just, you know, mingling again. And then we're going to go have fun in Napa for a day or two. So that's that. And then later in the year, probably in the fall time, so, I mean, definitely the fall time, I don't know, October probably. My friend Kevin Rogers, him and I did this. We started an event last October called Email Addiction. And that's like 3 or 4 people that we bring in and we just really get deep into their problems with email and stuff. And it's like, you know, it's not super pricey, but it's up there. But those are the 4 events I have so far. And, you know, whenever people ask me to speak, I rarely ever say no. So probably it'll be more than that, but that's what I got for now.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you, Ben. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys.
You've been listening to the Copywriter Club podcast with Kira Hugg and Rob Marsh. Music for the show is a clip from Gravity by Whitest Boy Alive, available in iTunes. If you like what you've heard, you can help us spread the word by subscribing in iTunes and by leaving a review. For show notes, a full transcript, and links to our free Facebook community, visit thecopywriterclub.com. We'll see you next episode.